This week, an incredibly rare and visually stunning natural phenomenon played out in a tiny slice of Michigan. And this one really stunk. But before you send that email, I'm not actually talking about the eclipse. This is a story about a man and his plant. Amorphophallus titanum, or the corpse flower, is a whopping 6 foot, 8 foot, sometimes even 12 foot tall variety of the genus Rafflesia. And while crowds were packing the highways, hustling to and from solar event watching, Kevin Hauser in Dexter was at home with his corpse flower, positioned in a two-story indoor atrium at the back of the Hauser home.
Kevin?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
April.
April, it's so good to meet you.
She's amazing.
Yeah, she was, she reached her peak bloom last night at about 2 a.m., but it's still quite amazing as the spathe is beginning to close. But honestly, it's probably even better today to see it because the smell last night in the space was so intense. We had to tape up the entire door of the conservatory to get so that we could actually get some sleep. And we had something between 8 and 10 turkey vultures swirling the house. I've got it on video. It was crazy because we had the back door open. And then you would think this time of year, there's like no flies or insects around. All these flies came in. And in fact, if you peek up into her today, you can see that there's some flies that are still in there trying to get to it.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. It is the largest unbranched flower that you will find in nature. It blooms rarely, for 36 hours or less, maybe only once or twice a decade, with a scent that can stop a clock. Not many people choose to cultivate such a rare plant. You can't just go to the nursery and grab one. So, of course, when Kevin Hauser gave us the heads up, we had to go see it.
All right, we'll go peek and then we'll
Let's go.
Do the interview. Okay, cool. Oh my goodness.
I'm inhaling. Oh, dear God. I went to Kevin Hauser's home with Stateside executive producer Laura Weber Davis to see the flower, known to its family as Corpsey, as she was beginning to decline in her brief blooming cycle. But boy, was she still pungent.
So it's giving stinky feet. Stinky feet, and also, I would say something that's been lying under the hedges for a couple of days. The flower itself is sitting inside a pretty massive 5 foot planter, and towers about another 5 or 6 feet above that. All right, here we go. I'm stepping up the ladder. It's like an 8 foot ladder, because this thing is up pretty high. Oh, it's beautiful. It really is quite stinky. I know it's hard to describe something in smell-o-vision, but I have to say it's giving very stinky middle school feet. I would say like, gosh, like a gym sock that's been worn in gym class all semester. And then they bring it home, and you're like, how does it possibly smell this bad? And they're like, these were my gym socks this year. Or like a swimsuit that was left in a locker for a month and never had a chance to dry out.
Kevin Hauser, thank you for welcoming us into your home to meet her.
Oh, you're welcome. So glad to have you.
How long have you had this remarkable specimen?
I've had her for about 6 years. We think that she was somewhere between 8 and 12 months old when I acquired the original corm, which was about 2 ounces and 2 inches across.
The corm is, for lack of a better term, sort of the seed that the entire huge, you know, 5.5 foot flower.
So just like a potato plant makes a seed and then it grows a potato, I would think of the corm as being more of the potato, because the plant actually does have a seed. Although I didn't plant mine from a seed. It was a baby corm.
The corpse flower is endangered. I mean, does one just send away for a corm on the internet and then get the start going in the bisected milk jug like I do with my tomato plants?
Surprisingly, yes. There are one or two companies or retailers, nurseries that have made this plant available over the years. The nursery that I bought this from is in North Carolina, and they had a batch that they made from clone specimens from leaf samplings. That nursery no longer is offering this plant. So you could probably, with a day of research, get your own.
I understand there's a pretty intensive project out of Chicago to clone these plants in hopes of propagating them and ensuring their survival in the wild. Do you know if they had anything to do with, it sounds like it was a different project than where you got the corm from.
Yeah. So Chicago Botanical Gardens has a sort of a pioneering effort to diversify the genetics of the species because there's so few specimens left. And it's just like, humans, genetic diversity is important for the success of the species. And so they're trying to collect lots of samples, lots of DNA, and create a better, bigger, broader population. The nursery that I bought this from is a for-profit, sort of nursery. So if we wanted to, for example, take corpses, leaves, and have a little lab in the backyard, we could probably do something similar, but I don't think so.
I couldn't help but notice you've named her. I'm a little shocked you didn't go with Audrey or Audrey 3. You're calling her Corpsey?
Yeah, there's a lot of, it's a common thing. There's a lot of people that have much more clever names. I think Frederick Meyer Gardens called those, there's a Putricia, and just different variations of the same theme. But when we got the corn, me and the girl started calling her Corpsey when she came into her first leaf. And that was always supposed to be a placeholder. We were going to come up with something a little more clever, but we never did. And so then she just always Corpsey.
When you say the girls, you mean you have kids? So what do they think of this whole thing?
Oh, I think they just like the media attention. Right? They were on Channel 7 a few days ago, but they don't have the same appreciation, I think. My daughter Evelyn, they're twins. She didn't even want to come down here yesterday because the smell was so frightening for her.
What is it that makes, a husband and father want to have such an incredibly unique specimen around the house? I mean, there are houseplants, and then there are houseplants, and then there's her.
I think you make some decisions, and certainly this one is, you make a little decision, then you make another decision, then suddenly you've got a big project going on, right? My decision was a visit to Mathai Botanical Gardens, where I saw an Amorphophallus titanium in leaf, and I said, this is a really cool plant, and I'm building a house, and maybe I can have this plant, and so I got it. And then you start learning about this story, right? And so then you start making decisions about, am I going to try to get it to flower, and here we are.
More in a minute. We'll be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
So we're talking about a plant that's native to Southeast Asia. What kind of environment do you have to maintain in order to keep her happy?
Yeah, so I actually have a map over there as one of the display items of the island of Sumatra. It's It's part of Indonesia. It's literally the equator bisects the island. And so literally no climate variation. Every day is over 90 degrees. Every day the humidity is over 85%. This plant actually, it loves that. It loves the sun. It loves the heat. It loves the humidity. But surprisingly, it's pretty robust. It can do just fine in 80 degrees and 60% humidity. But we actually have the climate control and the misting system and everything to get it exactly what she wants.
It's amazing. You walk in, and in addition to the smell, the next thing you noticed is that beautiful humidity. You say you've had her for 6 years. Did I hear you say this is the first time she's bloomed since you've owned her?
Yeah, absolutely. And she's, in fact, a very young A. titanum to be blooming. It's roughly 6.5, 7 years old. All of the recorded bloomings, and there's been about 800 now in the last 140 years. In cases where they do record the age of the plant, I haven't seen any less than 7 years old. And so she's been pretty happy, I think.
Could you tell when the bloom was coming on?
I could. There's the plant starts to break surface and sprout. It's not called sprouting, but it breaks the surface when it's ready to go. And the leaf actually does, the leaf is the normal cycle of the plant that continues and then goes dormant and then continues and goes dormant until the flower decides it wants to come up. But you can only really tell it's at a certain point of that growth, and it's characterized by the base of the plant actually has, it starts to taper. So it's almost like she's gets a little, like a little pregnant belly. And when it's in a leaf cycle, it's more of just a pyramidal structure.
There are some plants that need to cross-pollinate with others of their species in order to propagate. Do you happen to know, like, if a corpse flower, if A. titanum needs, like, can it reproduce all by itself?
It is extremely rare. The plant actually has male and female flowers down inside the spathe, and there's this sort of a delicate dance where the males open and then they close, and the females open and they close, and the pollen only lasts a certain period of time. And so in the wild, it's very, very rare for the plant to self-pollinate because of that cycle. There are universities and growers that have successfully self-pollinated the plant, but typically they will take pollen samples from the males, cryo-freeze them, grind them up, and then they can paint the females when they're open 12 hours later, and they've successfully been able to create clones that way.
Did you have work to do when you realized that there was going to be a bloom happening?
You know, honestly, the hardest part of all this was just prepping the emails and the invite lists and putting the runners down in the house, making sure the conservatory was clean. The plant itself, Corpsey, has been, very easy to take care of, and, just normal watering and fertilizing. And even during this flower cycle, I've been giving her a healthy amount of water.
So, you know how evergreen trees have roots that spread out very shallow under the dirt and flat, and deciduous trees have roots that look like the top of the tree under the ground? I couldn't help but notice that the corpse flower is in this huge urn. I've heard they have pretty big stems underground. Do you know if that's true?
So the root structure, think about it more as a large, like a pumpkin size, like a head. With a kind of spiky hair, like a spiky hairdo at the top, at the base of the plant. There's actually very little root structure below the corm. And we know this because with each progressive leaf cycle, as we've taken the corm out, you can really see that most of the roots want to be at the top of the soil surface, because, like a tree, because it provides that lateral stability. It's getting most of its energy from the sun, surface water, and then the carbohydrates in the corm itself. So it really doesn't need to have a tap root or anything like that.
How did it feel when you saw it blooming?
I actually had a dentist appointment. So I checked on her just before I left, and I could tell she was going to bloom. So I'm at the dentist the whole time, like holding my phone up, getting it cleaning, you know, watching her open. Yeah, I walked in and I saw that she was opening, and it was a sort of very poignant moment, kind of bittersweet because we knew that very shortly she was going to decline and go back to sleep.
I don't want to hurt her feelings, but that smell, how would you describe it?
Oh, it's, and I actually have a very sensitive nose, and I've grown other Amorphophallus species, and they, you know, they all have their own different smell when they flower. This one was, just because of the sheer volume of the plant and the spadix, it produced so much, you know, the sulfur compounds in this fairly small space, even though we have ventilation fans, that it was truly overpowering. What you smell in there is literally 10% of what it was last night. We had to tape up all the doors of this conservatory, have the doors open. You know, you think about, you know, Darwinian evolution, and you think about, you know, what that really, the thesis really means, which is, you know, mutations lead to adaptation, leads to mutations. I have a hard time understanding how this plant could have had so many mutations to do all the things that it's doing. I don't know if it's a higher power or something, but it's just, to me, just seeing that this is a plant that has all these clever ways of tricking animals to it, not just carrion beetles and flies, but birds and whatever else is out there. And it, the spathe is red, blood red, like a dead animal. It releases the smell that we already talked about. And in addition, the plant itself heats up to 95, 98 degrees. All this energy stored for 7 years or more, just for this 24-hour period, to mimic a dead animal in the forest so that it can reproduce. That's sort of the marvel for me of the whole thing.
Kevin Hauser, thank you so much for you and your wife Barbie welcoming us into the house to meet Corpsey. This has been a real opportunity.
It's been an opportunity for us too. We love NPR.
That's the Stateside podcast for today. When you're ready for more listens, go check out the full Stateside show at michiganpublic.org. Today's podcast was produced by our executive producer, Laura Weber-Davis. Other producers on our show are Mike Blank, Ronia Cabansag, and Mercedes Mejia. Our intern is Olivia Moradian, and our podcast editor is Rachel Ishikawa. Pod music comes from Blue Dot Sessions and from Audio Network. Thanks for listening in today. We'll be back in your feeds tomorrow. Till then, bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Williams.
I'm Lester Graham. We've been working on a big project about Great Lakes birds called the Bird Connection.
It will look at ducks and trumpeter swans,
egrets and herons,
and piping plovers. Yes!
We'll discuss what we've discovered at a Michigan Public Issues and Ale event,
including how some problems for birds are problems for people.
It's at Arbor Brewing Company in Ypsilanti, the evening of May 21st at 7.
You can register at michiganpublic.org.